UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show. Wherever in the world you are joining us from, how are you all? I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Tonight's guest is Lorraine from the United Kingdom, sharing what she believes to be abductions since the age of 12, and she has also witnessed numerous UFOs in the sky and on the ground. Lorraine is up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show.
Hi there, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you this evening?
I'm fine. I'm a lot cooler than it was, isn't it? So it's not quite as bad as hot weather.
It's a lot better now. And you're calling from Cumbria in the United Kingdom.
That's right, yes. Yeah, I live quite close to the Lake District, about half an hour away, in a small village off Junction 42 of the M6, which is going to come into my story at some point, which is why I mentioned it.
Lovely. Cumbria is a lovely part of the UK.
It is. I'm going to walk there.
Oh, it's Lake District. It's absolutely beautiful. Now, Lorraine, you have some experiences to share with our listeners. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, ma'am?
Yes. It all started when I was 12 years old, and I didn't really... No one looks for this to happen to them, if you know what I'm saying here. And I think it's quite apt. Can I start off by just reading a quote from Whitley Strieber, who said of his experience in communion, he said, "How do you go back to life as normal when your whole world has just changed?" And that, to me, sums it up for me. What happened to me, it was very frightening, traumatic. You know, you could use any number of adjectives to sum it up. It started when I was 12 years old, and all I can describe it as is at night, I believe, now looking back on it, although at the time I didn't know, have a clue what the heck was happening to me. It really turned my world upside down. I was alone in the house. I'd gone to sleep. I think I'd had an early night because my mum was out somewhere with a friend. She was a single parent. And at that time, I lived in a town in Lancashire. I didn't live in Cumbria, so I will just mention that. And I went to sleep as normal. And then all I can say is that all of a sudden I was filled from top to toe. I was just buzzing from top to toe. Literally, there was this buzzing sensation going through me. And then I blacked out completely. And I came to within seconds, it seemed. I went from nighttime, late nighttime, to early morning, and had no way of knowing what had happened in between. It was really weird. So effectively, I had what is now called missing time. And this happened to me from being about 12 years old until I was 16 years old. And several incidents stand out for me because during that time, when there was one episode when I was taken, I would be about 14. And I was never very clever. I wasn't a clever person. I wasn't naturally bright. And from being bottom of the class in everything, I suddenly went to being really, really bright. Everything started making sense to me that I hadn't previously. And I became very, very bright. This was one of the after effects of this happening. And these strange, if you want, experiences just kept happening to me. I just kept having these blackouts. And I tried to tell my mum about it, but she actually threatened to take me to see a psychiatrist. So you can see how difficult it was back then. Nobody took you seriously. And in addition to this, I didn't actually have sightings of any craft, so I never connected it with the alien abduction phenomena in any way, shape or form. In fact, what I thought was happening was that maybe I was, because I was a strong Christian at the time, I'm not now, but I was at the time, and I actually put it down to being persecuted by some kind of dark force or something, you know, and I just couldn't fathom what was happening to me at all, and it was horrible. And what was really frightening was that one night I was taken, I believe I would say taken now, and I was returned with really black, sooty stains on my nightdress, which was a pale blue at the time. When my mum found it in the laundry basket, she really told me off, and she said, "What on earth have you been doing writing on your own nightie?" And there were these strange black markings on my nightie. They were like sort of strange symbols or hieroglyphics. And I just thought, I didn't do this. Who has done this? And I was so frightened by this that I couldn't wait to wash them out. And I wish now, in retrospect, that I'd taken photographs of it and kept some kind of photographic evidence from when that happened to me. That was in 1978, you know, and I was nearly 14 at the time. Also, I would get these feelings of foreboding when it would happen, but there was nothing I could do to stop it. And I used to scream inside my head. I couldn't talk. I found I was paralysed from top to toe. I couldn't even move my hand or anything when it happened, you know, when I believe now it was taken. So it was very, very frightening and quite traumatic for me. And, you know, if I might go back to what I said about, you know, Whitney Stryver's quote earlier on, it does turn your whole world upside down. And I found myself, you know, with a form of PTSD, and I'm struggling, you know, to carry on with what was my normal life in between times. There was another occasion when I think they put me back in the wrong place, I believe now, because I actually came to in my back garden with the door locked against me. So I had to knock on the door, wake my mum up at 6 a.m. in August, this was, fortunately, so it wasn't too cold outside, because I actually think they put me back in the garden rather than in my bedroom. So my mum wouldn't believe me. I tried to tell her or articulate what was happening to me. But the problem with this happening to you is, how do you articulate such a very strange thing happening to you? How do you articulate this as a developing, growing teenager? What's happening to you is extremely frightening and traumatic. And there was one night as well when I was tidying through my closet, when I found two coat hangers that had literally fused together and melted and fused together, and I couldn't work out how on earth could that happen, and that actually terrified me. And again, I wish I'd kept them now when I look back on it. I wish I'd kept evidence of this, but I didn't do, and unfortunately I threw them away because I couldn't wait to get rid of any evidence of or anything that proved that something very strange indeed was going on and happening to me. And this actually continued till I was 16 years old. And then suddenly it seemed to stop all of a sudden. You know, I think I was taken at least once or twice a week. I don't know where I was taken. I didn't have any recall. I've never been regressed or hypnotized. So I have no idea, you know, what was happening to me through all of that. As I say, I would love to be regressed. if there was someone that could do it. But I've never found anyone in the UK, because I think in the UK we're not as enlightened about this yet, maybe, if I might use that word, as we're becoming more aware and more awake. But I think the Americans are far more enlightened and aware of this. And, you know, when you look at the work of Professor E. Mack, for example, you know, I think they're more aware of this and more ready to take people seriously, perhaps, than we have been in Britain. So there was no one I could go to. There was no one I could talk to at the time. And it was extremely traumatic and frightening. And as I say, it stopped when I went to train to be a nurse. And back then, when you trained to be a nurse, you did what they called a pre-nursing course in college. So I went to do that. Unfortunately, it stopped for a while. And I didn't have any problems at all. And then I kind of went to do my nurse training, was accepted to do my nurse training, and I specialised in psychiatric nursing. So I went to train at a famous hospital as what you would then call a pupil nurse, who would end up being a state enrolled nurse. We don't have that anymore now in Britain. You actually just go and do a degree now. But back when I did my nurse training, when I was 18, you know, you went and you did the SEN. You could be, you know, a staff nurse only, but with that, but it was better than nothing. So I went into my nurse training. It was during my night duty. This was my first sighting of an actual craft during 1984. And it was the summer of 1984, and they were just bringing the hay in, the harvesting. And it was a very old Victorian hospital. And it was brought to my attention by an Irish nurse I was working with. She was called Geraldine. And she came running onto the ward and she said, come and look at this, come and look at this. And I said, what? And I was all intrigued. And she took me to one of the long Victorian windows where you got a bird's eye view of the field. And over the field, there was hovering an orange ball of light. I don't know what on earth it was, but that was my first sighting of craft. And we did report it to the matron at the time, but she actually forbid us to either talk about it or tell any other members of staff. And we only talked about it with each other on the bus going home. And I think that was because, as I say, back in the 80s, there wasn't as much enlightenment, whatever you want to call it. There wasn't as much awareness of these things. You know, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have mobile phones. And I think that's a big factor to me in why people are taking this far more seriously now, because you've got people all over the world basically with these mini cameras on the phones that can point and press and, hey, presto, you've got a picture of what you're seeing. But of course, she didn't have that back then, so I had no way of proving that we'd seen anything. So this is why I think the internet has been such a large contributor to this sea change of people taking things more seriously than perhaps they did back then. So we were just laughed at and things, you know, and we just dismissed the incident and didn't talk about it. So that was my first sighting of UFOs, of a craft, should I say, or what I suspect was a craft. And then not a lot happened to me until I went to do, I left nursing in 1988 and went to do an English degree with the view of changing my career to become a teacher. So in 1982, I went to live in a rented house with my then fiance, and I had my second sighting there, and we saw a red object in the sky right above where we were living. And it was daylight, and this just stopped. It just literally stopped above us. And I thought, nothing that we've got can do that, as far as I'm aware. So my husband said, oh, it's just a plane or it's a helicopter or something. And I said, no, because there's no sound coming from it. And he was confounded as well in the end. And then suddenly, as we were talking, and I said, that's not something of ours. I was vindicated because it just shot off really fast and it was gone. And that was around about 1990. And also, after that happened, I started to have really bad dreams about somebody continually coming into my room, really vivid dreams. And I believe I started to be taken again because the paralysis started up again, where I would be paralysed and the buzzing would fill my whole body. And I would have missing time, literally jump from night to day again. And that started just as I started to do my degree towards the end of 1989. There was something else I wanted to talk about as well, just before that. When I was a qualified nurse, I qualified in 1986, and we took some residents on, we called them residents then. I don't think you say that now, but that's what we said then. And we took them on holiday to a Mediterranean destination. And I feel really, in retrospect, that I've been contacted by the Nordics, because the strange thing that happened to me here was that I was admitted to hospital with severe food poisoning, and they actually told me that I nearly died at the time. And the funny thing was that when I was admitted, I was very ill, but I noticed there were four blonde people sat around a blonde person in a bed in this hospital. And I thought, oh, this is embarrassing. You know, I felt really awful. And he looked, you know, they were all quite good looking, and I just noticed them. And then later on, when I came to, later on in the night, a lady helped me to the loo who was one of these people. And she was blonde as well. And I provided a drawing of her in my book as I remember her. And I thought, this is strange. Why are there no nurses around? Why isn't she on my buzzer? But at the time, I just accepted help because I felt so weak in helping me to go to the loo, of all things, which was really embarrassing, to say the least. And then she put me back in bed and I went back to sleep and thought nothing of it. And then I woke up later to find one of the nurses was putting me on an intravenous drip. And I asked her I looked at the bed and it was completely empty and made up. And I said, well, where's this blonde boy gone that was next to me? And she said to me, there's no blonde boy. There never has been anyone in here with you. You've been in here on your own all the time. And I just couldn't believe it. And I just put it down at the time because of my Christian worldview at the time to angelic intervention. You know, Jesus said, sometimes angels appear in disguise when we're in great trouble. And I was in great trouble in a foreign country. I was very, very ill. And I just put it down to angels and angelic intervention. I didn't even connect it with any UFO intervention at the time. And the funny thing was that as well as that happening to me, there was a nurse came to me. I really wanted to go to the hospital chapel to pray because I was a Christian, as I say. And a nurse came to me one day and she said, my name's Carola. She said, and I believe you've been asking to go to the chapel. I said, yes, I have actually. And she took me down through a cactus garden, what appeared to be a cactus garden anyway, to this very unusually dark chapel. And I thought, there's something weird going on here and I'm not quite sure what. And she had to take me in a wheelchair because I couldn't walk, I was so weak. And the funny thing is, I don't remember actually being wheeled up any kind of aisle. It was almost like I just kind of was there, sat in some pew or sat in some seat. I couldn't see. It was so dark. And suddenly this chap was next to me and he was talking to me. And she said, I'm going to introduce you to one of our elders, which is really strange because this country was Catholic country. And surely you would have said father or padre or something like that, or I'll introduce you to the priest. But no, she said, I'm going to introduce you to our elder. He wants to talk to you. And this elder said to me, and I'll never forget what he said as long as I live, and I've actually recorded this in my book as well. He said, why did you want to come to church so much? And I replied, because I wanted to pray and feel God's presence. And the elder said, but you didn't need to come to a church to find God. God is everywhere. He's all around us. And I replied, is he? How can that be? Because I had it in my mind, being a Christian and having a westernized view, that God was confined to a church as a building. That's how I thought of God at the time. And he said, yes, God is all around us, and one day you'll understand this. And it's really funny because when I look back on it now, I do understand it better. I think what he was trying to say was that God is in and through everything, through you know, that really we're all energy, is what I've learned since as well, and that we all have. Everything's made up of energy. So I think that was what he was trying to get over to me. But at the time, I just didn't understand. And this Carola, this lady, looked very Greek Cypriot. She looked, didn't look out of the ordinary. She wasn't blonde and blue-eyed. She wasn't particularly, she just looked like an ordinary nurse in a nurse's uniform. She brought me back, put me back in bed. And that was the least I thought of it until the next day when the doctor came to see me. And I thought, I'll ask for Nurse Carola. And I asked Nurse Carola, and he went and got the nursing sister for me because obviously he didn't know who I meant. And she said, there's no Nurse Carola on this ward. You must be mistaken. And I'd specifically asked this lady her name, so I knew I wasn't because I'd wanted to write to her. And she said, no, there's never been a Nurse Carola on this ward. She said, you're very much mistaken. And so that was at least six people, including the guy in the bed and the four people around the bed. So there was the blonde people next to me that I couldn't account for. everybody said they didn't exist, although they looked as solid as you or me. And they did exist to me in my mind. And there was this lady that had actually physically put me in a wheelchair and taken me down to a very suspect, very dark chapel. I've never been, in fact, I don't think I've ever been in such a dark place in my life. And it didn't strike me as odd till afterwards. And then I just thought, what the heck just happened to me? What the heck happened to me? And in the end, I just wrote it all off as angelic intervention at the time, because I just thought, you know, either I'm going to go mad or I've got to let this go, really, and stop trying to fathom out what on earth has been happening to me. So that was that until we got to 1990 and I saw this craft above the rented house that I lived in with my then fiancé. So what happened then was that everything was fine. And this is what I mean. You seem to have these gaps. You go for years and you have these, what I call gaps, where you get nothing happening whatsoever. You just lead your life, you know, like a normal, you know, everyday person. I carried on nursing for a while to get me through the summers, you know, while I got my English degree. And then unfortunately, I went through a very bad time because my then husband was being abusive. So I had to go for a divorce. And I went to divorce him in 1992. And unfortunately, that marriage didn't last. You know, I married him, but it didn't last for very long at all. So not a lot happened during the time apart from seeing this craft that I was with him. But afterwards, when I actually left him, I had a really rough time because I went to live in a flat that was owned by the corporation, and it was given to me by Housing Association. And the people above me were really noisy and horrible. And in the end, I had to move out of there and move back in with my mum. And meanwhile, I was desperately looking for a job, any kind of job. And I managed to get a job working in palliative care in a private nursing home, which I didn't mind at all because it suited me to be on 12-hour nights. It was four 12-hour nights a week. And nothing happened to me much at all in that time, except that I re-met a friend and he took me to a psychic shop in Yorkshire. And the funny thing was that the man in charge saw me looking into this. I remember getting this crystal ball in the shop and looking into it and thinking, oh, this is, I can see pictures in here, and being very surprised that I could see these pictures. And I also, something I forgot to say earlier was that I believe as a result of being taken or whatever you want to call it, that I became psychic because I could pick up objects from being at least 12. I did it at first at school when I was 12. And I could see pictures of people's lives, what they were doing, the past, the future, the present. And I could say, what's this I'm seeing? And I could, sometimes I would get warnings for people. The first time it happened to me, this psychometric ability, was when I was about 12. And I said to this girl, your grandma's in trouble. And I regretted my words, because she ran out of the dining room and went to find out. She was obviously very close to her grandma. And she came back the next day and she said that grandma had fallen down the stairs and knocked herself out, but that she'd been taken to hospital and that she was okay. So that was the first time it happened to me. But I can still do this. I can hold an object such as somebody's ring or earring or the watch and get things, get pictures of these things. And, you know, I tell people what I'm seeing and they can usually relate to what I'm seeing. So that was another, if you want, side effect of me, I believe, being abducted or whatever you want to call it. So after 1990, you know, after, during the 90s, I got my degree in 1992. And not a lot happened to me for some years after that, apart from I had a very strange job interview in Manchester where I saw a sales job in the paper. And this would be 1992, or the summer of 1992. Because I was desperate to get any job at the time because I hadn't yet done my teacher training. So I went to this job. And the funny thing is that I can't remember even getting from the train station to where this interview was. There were people going past in what looked like blue cars. And I know this sounds really weird, but they were blonde. And also I was greeted by a blonde receptionist. But the funny thing was that there were no things you'd expect to find in an office, even in the 90s. There was no telephone. There was no pictures on the walls. There was nothing on the walls. There was nothing on a desk. She was just sat behind a bare desk, this blonde girl. And she looked fairly okay, but she was very robotic in the way she spoke. And I remember asking her if I could go to the loo. And she pointedly replied, oh, it made her all flustered. She didn't know, gave me the impression she didn't even know what I was asking her for. And she said, oh, we don't have one of those. or something to that effect. And I thought, well, what office doesn't have a staff toilet, for goodness sake? And it was just really, really weird. And there's been a recent article about me in the one of the Lancashire papers saying that I have psychometric ability and that I predicted a bike race, the Lancashire bike race, to this journalist that came out to interview me. And that is significant in that when I was admitted to the so-called boss in this office, he didn't want to know or talk about any jobs. He just asked me if I would read his watch. And at the time, I thought, how on earth does he know that I'm psychometric? And it was like the whole thing was the facade to test my psychometric ability. And the funny thing was that I couldn't read his watch at all. It was almost like I was being blocked in some way. And that doesn't often happen. I always usually pick up something. So another thing about that interview is as well, which was really, really odd, was that he said, you can go now. We don't have any jobs. And I thought, well, that is so weird and so rude in a way. And then I went down the stairs. I remember going down some stairs to get to the ground floor, and there was a taxi waiting for me. And I didn't think, I just got in and told him to go back to the station because I was going to catch a train back to where I lived. And then I thought, afterwards, I thought, how on earth did he know? Because he had no telephone, and there were no mobile phones then. How on earth did he know to have a taxi waiting for me at that precise time? And it was just all really very, very weird and surreal. And I still have no idea to this day why that interview was so strange and so odd, really, is the only word I can find for it. But I've since kind of read a book by Bud Hopkins and another lady, which I name in my book, which has talked about similar people having similar job interviews, really weird job interviews. And that's in the book by Bud Hopkins called Intruders. You can find that, you know, on Amazon or anywhere, like in any good bookshop. That's by Bud Hopkins. So that was very weird for me, really, as well. And when I look back on it at the time, I thought I just wrote it off as weird. You know, still I hadn't clicked that anything particularly strange was going on. And it was only when I started working at this nursing home as a staff nurse that strange things started to happen again, and that would be in 1993. And I was on my way to work, and I met this colleague of mine called Mike on the bus. He was an auxiliary nurse, and I was often the only qualified nurse in charge on night, so it was all a bit scary. But I tried not to show it to the staff at first when I was new. So it was nice to meet him, and I was chatting away with him, and we were walking up to work this one night. And the funny thing was that on the way, we were stopped by these two. To me, they looked otherworldly, these two really handsome men. One was had black hair, black wavy hair, and the other one had sort of blonde hair and was very Nordic looking, I have to say. And they were both dressed identically, which I found really, really odd as well, in kind of navy blue pullovers and sandy slacks. And I remember it, even though it was years ago, and this was 1993 of summer when we were walking up to work, and they asked us for directions, or rather they asked Mike, and I can't remember what they asked for directions to, because I was too busy feeling that their energy or something was off about them. Anyway, the funny thing was, you would just write that off as two strangers asking you for directions. But the same night that that happened, around 1 a.m, this happened in front of eight colleagues as well. A buzzer went off on the very top floor. Now, there were three floors to this nursing home. And I remember running up to answer this buzzer and thinking, this is odd, because these people on the top floor, they were usually residents who had what we call senile dementia. And it was very unusual for them to buzz us, or, you know, to press buzzers. And I thought, what's going on here? And I just thought, maybe someone's had a TIA or something, that is a stroke or something. So I was really worried. Or maybe it's a relative that stopped late that we don't know about, and because that was sometimes allowed to happen. So I ran up to this corridor, and as soon as I get to the lift, I fear, what on earth is wrong? There's some, you could have cut the atmosphere with a knife. It just felt wrong somehow. And I thought, what am I going to find? And I turned round, you had to go around a bend, so to speak, to see the end of the corridor where the buzzer was going on. And right at the end of the corridor, I saw these really strange beings, and that's the only way I can describe what I saw. And one of them and the other, I think she was, I got a feeling it was a she. She was female. They did not look human at all. They looked She had really large ears and kind of snout for a nose. And they had red eyes. I think it was a man and a woman of their species, or whatever you want to call it. He was really tall, much more muscular looking. He was wearing what I can only describe as a long shirt and trousers underneath, a little bit like what you might see a Chinese man wearing, but it was very dark brown. She was wearing a scarf wrapped around her whole head, although you could see her ears pointing out of it, sticking up out of it. Rather in the manner that Asian ladies wear their pashminas wrapped around their head. That's the only way I can describe her. I just saw these two and I thought, am I hallucinating, was my first thought. And then I just thought, run for it. You know, it was fight or flight and I chose flight. But rather than running back to the lift or to the stairs, the exit, I ran into the nearest bathroom and locked myself in. In my mind, it had only been 10 minutes as I did this. But then there was a knock on the door and I thought, oh my God. I opened the door and there was the staff nurse that was on duty with me that night. I was lucky I had another staff nurse. She was called May. And she said to me, I'm calling her May. She wasn't really called May, just because I don't want to say her real name. But she said to me, where have you been? You've been an hour answering this buzzer. What on earth have you been doing? And to me, it had only been 10 minutes in my mind. But then, of course, I had my fob watch on. And when I ran up to answer the buzzer, it was 1 a.m. But when I looked down at my buzzer, quite a lot of time had gone by, nearer to 2 a.m. So I felt, in retrospect again, that I had been either taken by this pair or something had happened in the interim, but I definitely had missing time, at least 50 minutes of it. And again, if anybody would like to offer me a regression therapy, or I don't know of any hypnotists that do that in Britain, I'd be very interested if there was any Americans that could offer that for me, or indeed anyone that I'm not aware of in Britain that might do it, because I would love to know what happened to me that night. But all I know is that 8 staff witnessed me go missing for at least an hour and wondered where on earth I was, because it never took you that long. Normally, to answer a buzzer, normally you would either ask someone to come up and join you. You would go back down if you needed help with them, but you would never spend so long on your own, is what I'm trying to say. Yes, it was an absolute emergency. So it was very unusual, really, for that to happen. Yeah, so it was around 2 a.m. by the time she came up, and she said to me, you're as white as a sheet. Do you want me to go and make you a sweet cup of tea? And I told her what had happened. I told her what I'd seen, but she just wrote it off as that I was tired and maybe hallucinated it or something. And there was absolutely nothing there. I went with all the staff around all the floors. There was nothing to be found, nothing unusual. And it was just a really, really weird experience, all in all. And I often do, still now, wonder what on earth happened that night. But I do know what I saw. And there is a drawing of the male that I provided in my book. So you're welcome to look at that. My book is available shortly. You're welcome to look at that picture. So that was that.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of high strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
And then we come to 1995. In 1994, I met my second husband, who was going to be. He was a junior doctor at the time. And I met him and we got married. Or we moved in together the following year and eventually we got married. But that's was in 1996, but this was summer of 95. We bought a semi-detached house in Lancashire where he was working in a hospital at the time, rather large hospital. And this particular night, he was away on casualty and he was away all night. And normally I didn't care about that. You know, it didn't bother me. I was quite happy on my own. It was an area where there were a lot of people around you. It wasn't an isolated house or anything, which is all the more weird for what I'm about to tell you what happened, what transpired. This was probably around July of 1995, and I was on my own. He was away doing a casualty shift. And all of a sudden, there was a big blackout, and the whole area blacked out. So I was in bed by this time, and I thought nothing of it. I just thought there's been a blackout, so what? And then all of a sudden, I got what I can only... This is the first time this happened to me as well. This is the first time I had what I will call a telepathic message given to me, and very disconcerting when it first happens to you. And you actually do wonder, am I going mad? Am I hearing things? Am I actually hallucinating this? But as clear as a bell, I had this man's voice come into my head and say, come to the back garden, come now. And there was an urgency about this. And I thought, in view of all the other things that had gone before, I thought, what on earth is going on here? I was absolutely petrified and point blank. I replied in my own head, I replied, I'm not coming. And refused to go down to the back garden, which is something I think I'm eternally to regret, actually, because who knows what would have happened if I'd kind of complied. I don't know. Anyway, I tried to go to sleep, but the next thing that happened is it was almost like they thought, well, okay, have it your way. And the next thing that happened was what by now to me was a familiar kind of scenario of I was filled from top to toe with this awful buzzing from top to toe, and I blacked out and came to circa around 6 a.m. in the morning. And I thought, it's happened again, I've been taken, something's happened, something weird's happened here. Again, I started to wonder what on earth had happened to me. It was about 6 a.m, I remember looking at my watch and I thought, well, something weird's happened, but I'm going back to sleep because it's my day off today and I don't care. So I went back to sleep. But then when I tried to get back to sleep, I started seeing what a series of kind of stills, or almost like when you, on the old-fashioned cameras, when you used to pull the film out and you see the stills, and they were going flashing in front of my eyes. And what I saw was, in this strange dream of stills, was, first of all, I was in the nightie that I actually had on at the time, but I walked down the stairs and for some reason the house was lit up, even though there had been a blackout. And the blackout continued into the daytime, because something I didn't mention was that I couldn't, you know, I tried the lights and they wouldn't come on. But after I went to sleep again, and I had this really vivid dream of going down the stairs to meet this man, and he was dressed in what looked like a navy blue diver suit, but he also had some kind of mask on his face, and his eyes just were not human at all. There was no way he was humanoid in build, but his eyes were not human. His eyes were wraparound, much bigger than a human's, almond-shaped, and he had vertical pupils like a cat, I would say like our cats have. And he had an all-in-one, I would say like a diver's suit covering his head as well, and this mask covering his face. And I went down the stairs to him as if I was greeting an old friend or something. This is really weird because the ceiling, all I can say is, I looked up and the ceiling, my dining room ceiling opened up. The stairs led directly into the open dining room area. And all I can describe it as is that the ceiling opened up and above me, I could see shiny black floor and tic-tac-shaped small shiny black craft lined up in a row. And there were at least four of them that I could see in this dream. And then I had further flashback of being taken aboard what seemed to be a large corridor I was walking down, and I was being accompanied by someone that was holding my elbow. And as we walked past, I saw these guards who had equally strange features similar to his. And they put their fist on their chest and kind of seemed to salute us as we walked past them down this very shiny walled corridor, shiny black wall it had. And there were symbols on these walls. I recognised what we know as the fleur-de-lis symbol. And I recognise a lot of it looked like, one of them looked like the Celtic knot symbol as well. And some of it looked quite familiar. It reminded me, should I say, of the Celtic knot and the Celtic cross. So I thought this is all very weird. And I did get a lot of vivid flashbacks after this had happened. And I seemed to keep seeing these symbols. And one that dominated was fleur-de-lis. And I thought, is this in some way significant? Is it related to something? Is it connected to any particular type of ET? I don't know. In retrospect now, I think about that now and wonder about that. Maybe one of your listeners might know more about the background to the fleur-de-lis and where it comes from. I'd be interested to know. So that was the most unusual thing that happened in my second marriage, the first thing. But then nothing seemed to happen again for a while. I had a large gap after I married in 96, and really till I got pregnant in 1997 with my first child, nothing else happened. But then after I got pregnant with my first child, I was often taken during my pregnancy, and I worked out that I was taken at least once during each trimester that I knew of. And I began to also figure out what was going on, because what I forgot to mention was that when back in 94, when I was working in the nursing home, I used to read a lot on nights between gaps. And I got hold of a copy of Whitley Strieber's Communion. And I started to put two and two together and make 10, as you do. And I began to shift my view from thinking this is some kind of persecution of dark forces to this is, am I experiencing ET contact? Am I experiencing contact with these grey aliens that, you know, because we all know we've seen that book, that there's an iconic picture on the front of the classic grey alien. And at that time, right up to then, I'd never had or remembered, apart from the chap at the bottom of the stairs who had cat-like eyes and the people I saw in the nursing home, I'd never seen a grey up to this point. But now at this point, and you asked twice what came first, the chicken or the egg, I don't really know the answer to that. But I know what I saw during this abduction when I was pregnant in my second trimester with my first son. I woke up to find a grey stood over me, and he was holding an instrument that looked in shape like an iron. And he was right above me. And I remember screaming at him in my head and saying, go away, I'm not coming, leave me alone. And not come in, and of course, I didn't have any choice. I was once again paralysed and blacked out and the usual scenario. And this was very frightening for me because I was really terrified that they were going to take my baby, that they were going to take my unborn child, that they were going to harm him in some way. And because this happened during my pregnancy, I was very, very frightened throughout my pregnancy for the baby. But of course, I went to all the checks that you normally go to, and they said it was perfectly fine, which was reassuring. But this ongoing as it was very frightening. And also the fact that when I tried to tell my husband about it, he just didn't get it at all. He just didn't understand. And he said, oh, you've got a good imagination. You're just imagining all this. And it was really, that makes it even worse, because I tried to tell my mum as well, as I said earlier, when it started happening when I was younger. And she put it down to the same thing. She said, it's just you, it's your imagination. And then she thought I was going mad at one point, but she never did take me to a psychiatrist. And this just makes it a whole lot worse, that you're not believed, and B, it's so hard to articulate in words these really high strangeness experiences. So you end up compartmentalizing it all, and you start to learn very quickly to keep it to yourself and not bother to tell anyone, not to try even to share with even people close to you, because you think, well, they're just going to think I'm mad or something. And this carried on and on, you know, right through my pregnancy until I gave birth to my first son. And he was a lovely, healthy baby. He was a happy baby. There was nothing untoward or strange about him. You know, he was a lovely child, really, but very, very intelligent right from the off, I noticed. And the first time I kind of twigged how intelligent he was when he kind of was playing about with the video. He loved Thomas the Tank Engine. And back then you had video. you didn't have streaming. And he was watching a video one day of Thomas the Tank, and I watched him press the button, and he'd worked out how to wind it back and how to get it precisely at different parts that were his favourite bits of it. And I thought, that is a very intelligent toddler, because he was a toddler by then. Although me and my husband are quite intelligent, you could put it down to just inherited intelligence. This child has gone on to, he went to school when we moved to Cumbria, and he, when I went to get his first report from infant school, she said to me, it's like having a little professor in the class. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, she said, he's highly gifted, highly intelligent, especially with computers. And I said, really? And she said, yeah. She said, he's just a natural with computers. He just, you don't even need to teach him, essentially. It's like he just figures it all out for himself. And I said, wow, this carried on, you know. And he went to secondary school. And the next thing I knew, he'd been nominated for a BAFTA. And made a game all on his own, programmed it, everything himself at the age of tender age of 16. And we all had to go down to London to the BAFTAs. And although he was nominated, he didn't get it. It was in the gaming category. He didn't get the BAFTA, but I was so proud he even got nominated, which was huge in and of itself. And of course, he went on to uni and he gained a first class honours degree and in computer science. And then he got a master's, and he got a distinction at master's through the roof. And he also, he was classed as a savant at school, as a gifted child. And he was actually interviewed by Ofsted on one occasion, and they were saying, are you being stretched enough? And that sort of thing. So I don't know why he's so intelligent. It could just be inherited. But me and my husband are very average intelligent, I have to say. I wouldn't say we're Einsteins or anything like that, but here we have this child that I was taken at least three times that I can remember, I believe, while I was carrying him. Very, very intelligent, very bright child. And then once he was born, I was left alone. Or I think I was left alone. Nothing happened. Huge gap again. Till we moved up to Cumbria and I got pregnant with my second child. Again, I was taken. Definitely know I was by this time, because they made the mistake of putting me back in the kitchen, of all places. And I found myself in the kitchen, on the floor, in my nightdress. Now, you could say that I sleepwalked. Some people, being cynical, might say that. But when it was accompanied by the familiar buzzing and blackout, then you know when you come round that something very odd has happened to you. Also, I started to get black marks on my clothing again. I don't know where they came from. They were just stains this time. They weren't symbols or anything like that. But it was all very disconcerting, and I knew again that I was being checked on. And I also had a very vivid dream of someone wrapping their arms around me from behind and pulling me towards them, and I couldn't move. And I was very heavily pregnant with my second son at the time when this happened. And again, he turned out to be extremely clever, very bright, just graduated this year with a 2-1. He's going on to do an MSc. Again, very bright, but also what strikes me about him is that he is extremely eco-conscious, very, very green, will not eat meat, always insisted on being a vegetarian from right from being a little child, hated hurting anything, even if you squashed a fly, he would have hysterics, things like that. Really conscious of hurting anything at all, very gentle, kind, caring, beyond caring, I would say, but for any life form, be it plant or animal, trees. He loves being out in nature, and he hates you to kill, or and he doesn't like you to use any false thing like a spray deodorant or bands in the house. We have to use roll-on. He's very conscious of anything poisonous. You can't have fly spray in the house. He goes absolutely mad if you have fly spray or anything that he perceives could be poisonous to the environment. And he's really environmentally friendly, recycles absolutely everything, and he insisted on us getting a compost bin to compost all of our waste. He said we're far too wasteful. So he's extremely conscious of preserving the planet as much as he can as an individual. And I have to wonder about all this, if this is something to do or has anything to do with the fact that when he was developing in the womb, I don't know, it could just be that that's the way he is. But I have to wonder about all this, that he's so hot on the environment and that kind of thing. And he's always saying And he comes out with the most amazing things that could cure environmental problems. But he says, nobody listens to me. That is how he turned out. Whether it's connected, I really don't know. But I have to wonder. So then there was kind of really a very huge gap between me having my second child before I started to have anything else happen to me. The most significant thing that happened to me, and this was in 2008, so it's a lot later, was I started to see, and this is the most significant year really, when I actually saw things in the sky. And what I saw was strange lights over the field. And how this all began was, and this is the weird thing, I had a dream, a very vivid dream, that a tic-tac cream-shaped craft had landed in my front garden of all the places, and that I went out to greet a blonde man that got out of this craft at the side of it and came down a few steps and shook my hand and greeted me as if we were all friends or something. And I got a very good look at him, and what I do have is a very good memory for faces. And he was extremely Nordic in appearance, this man, what we call the Nordic aliens that I know about now. The very next day after I'd had this dream, we took the kids to the library, and I thought nothing of it. I thought it was just a dream and dismissed it out of hand. And then when we were coming back from the library, the field to the right of us, my husband suddenly said, look at that. And I said, look at what? And he said, look, there's some crop formations in that field. He said, where'd that come from? So we stopped and we had a closer look. And these formations look like the classic swastika, is all I can say. And at the time, of course, we didn't have any phones on us or anything like that. You know, they weren't as small as, you couldn't photograph things with them then anyway. We didn't have a camera on us, so to speak. So, of course, you didn't take a photo of it. We just had a look at it. And my husband, who's very cynical, had a good look and he said, there are no footprints coming in or out that have come from above. We looked at this for a while and we were puzzled. And the funny thing we noticed was that there was a Land Rover with blacked out windows nearby. Now, whether that was significant, I've no idea. It could just have been a perfectly innocent person parked up there too. But I felt, which is strange, I felt as if he was waiting for us to go. Anyway, so we got back in the car, thought nothing of it, and drove back home. And on our drive was parked a black Land Rover. And you could see who was in this car. And who was in this car was the man that had greeted me in my dream. And I thought, this is weird. And I looked at him. My husband didn't look long enough, but I, being in the passenger seat, had a good look. He was in this Land Rover. And to me, it looked like the man that I'd met in my dream. Now, believe me or don't believe me, but this is what I saw. And as soon as they saw us, they looked alarmed and they set off and they went. And my husband said, who's that? Turning round in our drive and just put it down to somebody being cheeky enough to reverse into our drive and want to turn round, and we just caught them. I myself thought, no, that's not what it was. There's more to this than meets the eye, but I didn't know what. And then following those two incidents, I kind of just brushed them off as a bit weird, but hey, sometimes things happen like that. And was it just coincidence or something? I don't know. I have no idea what it meant or who it was. And then I started to see these lights over the field shortly after. And it would be about mid-August 2008. And what they were doing was zigzagging. They were coming together and coalescing, and then they were moving apart again. And I watched them for a while and I thought, this is strange. And then thought nothing of it. And then my mum came for a weekend. And what I forgot, I actually forgot to mention this in my book, but my mum came for a weekend and said, I didn't want to wake you last night, but I saw what I think was a UFO above the pylon in that field opposite. And it was the exact same field where I'd seen the lights, the zigzagging lights. And I said, well, what did it look like? And she said that it was like a glowing orange ball and it was dark, so she could see it quite clearly. And she, my mum, if you'd known her, she's never a person to romance. She's not a person with a vivid imagination. She was a very straight-laced, straight-down-the-line sort of lady. And she said, no, it was taking power. I think it was taking power from this pylon because it was hovering above it. And the pylon was lighting up as it was hovering above it, which was significant, I thought. So I reported this, and I'm glad to say I did report this to MUFON, the British MUFON. And he said, well, let's believe her, because my mum was in her 80s by then. He said, well, let's believe this lady. And I never really heard back from him, which was strange, I thought, but at least I did report it on that occasion. And then a few days later, I went out again, and I was woken up. I was woken up again, should I say, by a loud humming noise. And all I can describe it of, it sounded like there's a helicopter right above me. And at the same time, I went to look out the window, and I saw this huge, it looked like a Catherine wheel on its side. And it looked to be the height I would estimate of at least 3 buses high, with lights around the side. And I estimate it was very big anyway. And it rolled over on its side, this what I will call a craft, a UFO. And then it kind of righted itself and hovered above the field for a few seconds, and then it completely just vanished, just disappeared. And I thought, what on earth is going on, is what I thought. And I've actually included a drawing of that, what I saw. It's only a crude drawing, but it's in my book as well. And I watched that wink out, it just disappeared. And the funny thing was, after seeing that, you would have thought I'd have run to get the boys or to get my husband, or even during when I saw it. No, what did I do? I just calmly went back to bed. And that is strange to me, the fact that I just calmly went back to bed. I don't understand why I reacted that way to it. And then the following night, after telling my husband about this, I threatened. I said, if I see these lights again, I'm going to go out and investigate. Anyway, I did see the zigzag lights again, so I thought, right, I'm going to get in my car. I'm going to go and investigate this. So I went in my car towards onto the B6263, which there's a roundabout that leads to the junction 42 and junction, you know, that you can get off to go south. I was just driving down the B6263 and I got to this field. And right at the end of the path where you can get into the field, there was a craft, some sort of craft, egg-shaped, and it was glowing kind of pearlescent in the dark. And either side of it, there were two tall figures. I don't know whether they were male or female. I felt male, and I stopped in my car, and I thought, they want me to go out. They want me to go to the craft. And I thought, I can't do it. I can't. I was absolutely terrified. I was frightened. All sorts of scenarios went through my head. I thought, what if I get abducted? What if I get taken and never brought back? I've got 2 young children. So off I drove in terror towards the M6. Now, what I'd intended to do, but I was so frightened at the time and panicky that I made the mistake of going onto the M6 heading north. What I'd intended to do was go right round and drive back up into the village, but I didn't do that, did I? I went onto the M6. I will never understand why I did that. So feeling very panicky, very confused, very disorientated by then, I thought I'll pull in at the service station, which was about 10 minutes normally away from the junction. So I pulled into the service station, and the really weird thing was that it wasn't lit up. This is from my perspective. But there was a white lorry parked there, and it had no logos or anything on, which is highly unusual when I look back on it. And coming down the steps of this lorry, there was a man. And I thought, I'll run and ask him for help because I had no idea how to turn back north. And at the time, what I didn't realise, what I only found out afterwards, there's no way to turn back north, to head back north from that, you know, if you go on the south side. So I said to him, can you lead me back onto the north facing M6? And he kind of nodded at me and said, in fact, we didn't really speak. I don't think we spoke. He didn't speak at me, is what I'm saying. I spoke at him. He just nodded and kind of indicated for me to follow him. And so I did this. But when I look back on this incident now, it's really weird because I feel as if I've been tricked in some way. Because what happened was, from my perspective, all I could see was the white back of this lorry. This is my perspective. And then suddenly it shot off and I was pacing north and driving north again. And the funny thing is that when I look back on that, the back of it was too close. If you got that close to a lorry in real time, you would have only seen perhaps the bottom back of the back wheels. You wouldn't have seen the back white doors, if this is making sense, because my car was low down to the road. And it puzzled me after for a long time. And I really don't know what happened that night. But I'm wondering if, in fact, what I was made to see was a lorry when, in fact, it was a craft, and that maybe I was literally picked up and put back down, facing the right way to go back north. I really don't know. I posit that as a possibility. That was one of the weirdest things that's ever happened to me. You know, although there have been a lot of weird things, as I say, considering the history I have as well of abduction scenarios, you have to be very suspicious. And also another significant thing at the time that this was all happening was that other people, I think, had had sightings of an orange ball above the motorway or along the M6 in Cumbria. So if anyone from Cumbria is listening and you also saw anything suspicious in 2008, please, I would love feedback on that. So that's what happened to me, and I continue to wonder about this day. So I really do believe that in some way or other, contact was instigated with me for me to see these lights and all the things leading up to it. And I'm convinced that maybe if I'd been a bit braver, that maybe I would have been, who knows, I might have been taken aboard that egg-shaped craft. I really don't know. You can only look back and retrospect a great thing. But it's a big regret of mine that I just did not have the courage to get out of the car and go near and get a closer look. Other braver people might have reacted differently, but I'll never know. So, you know, that's just one of those things. But I do know what I saw, that it was real, and that everything I saw that night, to me, you know, I've told it as best I can. I've recalled it as best I can, you know, and I'm being perfectly honest here. I have no idea what happened on the M6. Another thing that I will mention is that set off on that journey at 3:15 that night, and I didn't get back till 5 a.m. So it was taking me, what should have taken at best 20 minutes to half an hour, had taken nearly 2 hours. So there's something wrong somewhere about what happened that night.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
So in that same year, in 2008, I also experienced missing time at the cinema. What happened was, we went, of all the ironic things, we went to see the film I Want to Believe, The X-Files. And I went, of all the strange and innocuous things, I went to the loo following the film. And there was no one in, which was strange in and of itself. There was no one in the toilet. And the lights flickered on and off above my head. That's all I can remember after there being anything strange going on. I told my family I'll be 5 minutes, which is what you are. And from my perspective, that's all I was. I was just 5 minutes. But I came out, and my children and my husband giving me angry looks and gesticulating at me. And they said, "Mum, where the heck have you been for the last half an hour?" And I said, "What do you mean half an hour? I've only been 5 minutes." And my husband kind of pointed at his watch. And in fact, I had been a lot longer than I thought. And I thought, what on earth is going on? And significantly, this was shortly after the events that I've just talked about, seeing the lights and the M6 events, I'll call them. This is when I believe I was actually abducted, probably taken from the cinema, and my whole family actually witnessed me not being abducted, but taking half an hour in the loo. What should have taken 5 minutes? Where was I? What was I doing? I have no recall. To me, it was just 5 minutes. So it's all very, very strange. But now I'm going to jump in telling in my rhetoric to lockdown year, which was March 2020. Lockdown started. And some very odd things happened to me at that time, and I'll try and relate it as best I can. So the first thing that happened was that I woke up one night and had this paralysis that I get, and also the buzzing, etc. And I woke, but on this occasion, I actually could see a person stood next to my bed. And judging from where his waist came to in the dark, he seemed to be at least 6 feet tall, because I'm going off how tall my eldest son is. And he comes about to there. if he stood next to me, because we've since kind of experimented with that to kind of work out how tall this person was. And I thought, oh, who on earth is this? Stood in the dark. I thought, who on earth is this figure? And it, obviously I was very frightened. And I managed to break free from whatever paralysis, whatever they do to paralyze you, and reached for my lamp. And as soon as I turned it off, it disappeared. And I thought, this is weird. So I'm trying to get back to sleep. And I have this voice come into my head that says, you're going to go through a very difficult time, but we're going to protect you. And at the time, I'd kind of underestimated how difficult I was going to find lockdown. I just didn't realise how difficult I was going to find it. And mentally, I really struggled with lockdown. So they were right, I was going to go through a difficult time. But I kind of was able to see this, what this figure was wearing. And I'll try and describe it here. As I say, he was about 6 foot tall, and he seemed to be wearing what looks to me like the kurta that men of Indian ethnicity wear. I couldn't see his lower garments, but I swear he would have had some trousers or footwear. I could not see that. But he looked like he was wearing, if you imagine a kurta, but very dark in colour. His hair was kind of medium length, I would say, and he was at least 6 feet tall. And I think because of my psychic ability, or whatever you want to call it, I think I did sense a continuing presence in my room. And one night, I thought, I'll just get my camera out and snap it into the dark and see if anything comes out of this. And funnily enough, to my great and utter surprise, and kind of, not horror, but that's too strong a word, but I would say to my surprise and shock, I was very shocked by this. I found that I captured a figure in my room, and he was very, very tall. And he was stood by my dressing table, and he was well above it. And I would estimate that he was at least 7 feet tall. And obviously it's very dark, you can't see a lot, but you can make out his facial features. And I have to say, he looks very, very Nordic. And I'm not just saying that, I've shown other people, I've shown family members, and I've shown friends, and they all have said, oh gosh, he does look kind of Scandinavian. And other experiences that I've shown it to have said, oh no, he looks very like the Nordic. So I've included that in my book. If you want to read my book and get a copy of it and look at that, my most compelling pieces of evidence, I think, to date, that there is ongoing contact happening with me. And another night, around April, I kind of told that I was going to have a medical procedure done to me, protect me from this disease. And then on my lower left arm, when I woke up one day from the usual kind of where I believe I was taken again, because I had the usual blackout and the buzzing moving through me experience and waking up suddenly in daylight, to find that my lower left arm felt very sore at the bottom. And when I examined it, I found three tiny red puncture marks. And if they joined, they would form a perfect triangle. And they called that a necessary medical procedure. And then another time, closer to the present, in 2021, I think this was, I was given a message that I would be actually given a message. And funnily enough, I just read a copy of Michael Zerger's We Are Here, which is referring mainly to the Nordic aliens visiting people and contacting people. I thought nothing of this. And I just thought, I wonder if you're going to give me a message. And I went, I had an appointment with the optician to have my eyes looked at. So I went to collect my sunglasses, my prescription sunglasses, and my new glasses. And afterwards, I went and I thought, I'll get a coffee. And I left my son, who was also getting new glasses, to get his. So I went on my own. And I was stood in this queue, and there were three people behind me. And there was one man and with this group, and he was staring at me ever so intently. And I thought, why on earth are you staring at me? And I tried to just pretend it wasn't happening. And then I thought nothing of it. And what I did understand about this group was that they were definitely not English. They seemed to have a foreign accent. But I just wrote them off as perhaps from the Polish community or something like that, because we have quite a lot of Polish people here. And they were all blonde, you know, blue-eyed people. There was three men and one woman. And the man that was nearest to me was staring at me ever so intently, and I thought, what on earth is going on? But then thought nothing of it. And came home, and I've been carrying my phone with me. I take it everywhere. and my phone case, not my actual phone, but my phone case, I found had some strange symbols marked on it that had not been there prior to this incident. So in my mind, I thought, is there a connection? Is there not a connection? Is it all just coincidence? And I thought, well, this is important in some way. So I got my son to photograph these symbols that had appeared on my phone in ink. They were in blue ink. I sent a copy of them to Michael Zerger, who's the author of We Are Here. And I asked him what he thought of them. And he said, well, hang on a minute. I actually have a copy of the symbols given to Adamski during the meeting in the desert with an ET. And he sent me a copy of this. And he said, actually, your symbols are very similar. And this struck me as absolutely amazing, particularly after the fact that I've been telepathically given this message, that I, in fact, was going to be given a message. Now, mine was much smaller. It was nowhere near the length of the symbols given or the message given to Adamski. But what was very interesting was that they were very similar shapes. They're very similar in the way that they were formed. And I thought, there's something funny going on here, was all I could think. I definitely investigated the obvious kind of, has she got something damp in her bag, is what some of your more logical people might be thinking, that imprinted off. There were no pens in my bag. There was nothing wet that had leaked in my bag that could have accounted for this. And the way that they were precisely, if you want, written, for want of a better word, on my phone cover would suggest that somebody had literally, would have needed to have written these symbols. They just couldn't have printed off, is what I'm saying. To this day, I still have no idea what they meant. I often wonder, did they just say simply, we are here? Michael actually suggested this is what they're saying. They might just be saying, we are here to you. And I thought, well, that's a good thing to say to me. That's fine if that's what you want to say. You know, that it was some kind of confirmation, particularly given the fact that I just read his book and studied all the things that he'd said in it about contact from around the world with Nordic. So it was all very puzzling. And all this happened during what essentially was the lockdown time, that England was locked down. You could only go to do your shopping or whatever. You know, we were very limited in what we could do. So really, that's all that I want to say about my book. If you want to get a copy of it, it's called Phantoms in the Night or ET. My name is Lorraine McAdam, and it will be available on Amazon, and there's an Audible copy if you want to get that. It's also available as an ebook, and it will be available in some major book chain shops as well. If you want to contact me personally, if you've had similar experiences, you can email me at dixie10@gmail.com. So again, that I'll give you that again. It's dixie10@gmail.com. Also, if you want to contact me on Facebook, I'm under Lorraine McAdam there. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lorraine McAdam. You're welcome to contact me through either of those. I would never have looked for this to happen to me. It is very frightening and disconcerting. And there's no way I'm making it up. Some people might say she's making all this up to get more money or whatever, but I'm not, because I don't need the money. I earn good money as a teacher. I'm a perfectly ordinary person. I've got 3 degrees, you know, apart from my bachelor's degree. I've got 2 degrees actually in teaching. I've also got my nursing qualification. I'm just an ordinary British citizen, really. An ordinary woman, mum and housewife. I never looked for this to happen to me. But if I might reiterate again what Whitley Strieber said to finish, how do you go back to life as normal when your whole world has just changed? You know, quoting Whitley Strieber. And that's how it makes you feel. And I really have no idea why these things have happened to me, but I really have no idea why these things have happened to me. And I just find it all very puzzling and very frightening at the same time. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
That's wonderful, Lorraine. Phantoms in the Night or ETs. I will put all the links down below in the show notes so the listeners can go and visit. Wonderful. And that's all available now.
Great. Yes. Yes, it is. And it's Lorraine McAdam, if you want to look up the author. Do you need me to spell my surname? Because it can be spelled differently. It's MC capital ADAM McAdam. And Lorraine is LORRAINE.
Wonderful. That's great. We got all that. Now, the buzzing sensations, was that something that you would, that would happen every time just before an incident?
Yes. Yeah. The only way I can describe it is a bit like the noise of bees droning, but much, much louder. It just, it fills your ears and it fills your body. It's like your body's vibrating to the tone of it. It's horrible, and you can't move. And you quickly realise that you're paralysed, you can't move, there's nothing you can do. In fact, I've screamed out, I've sworn at them, whoever it is. I've never, apart from that one sighting I had of a grey during my trimester, second trimester, I haven't actually been able to move at all, you know, to turn around or anything. And I swear at them, I've sworn at them and said, leave me alone. And I actually screamed inside my head when I was being taken next to my partner in the early 90s, and he just carried on sleeping next to me. He just didn't hear me or anything. I couldn't move, I couldn't talk, and I would just black out from my perspective. Almost like when you're anaesthetised at the dentist, or if you're having an operation, and you come to and you think, what on earth? And times, you know, it'll be at least hours later. And it's like, that is how it is, you know. And you have no recall of what's happened to you in the interim. It is horrible. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, you know. It really is very frightening. And to have that happen from being so young, you know, when you go back to the 80s and there was no internet, there was no Google, there was nothing you could look it up with or make contact with anyone else that it might have been happening to. So it was horrible, you know. You were very much on your own. And I felt like I was going round the bend. I thought, am I going mad, you know, at one point. And to have that happen to you as a teenager as well, and really, and essentially to carry on throughout your life at intervals, it makes you wonder, why me? You know what I mean? I really don't know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In those days, you know, there was just not information out there.
There wasn't. And it was absolutely horrible. And as I say, it was communion that woke me up to the possibility that, because I was a strong Christian when I was in my teens, put it down to some kind of demonic persecution. You'll probably laugh at that. Of course, it wasn't. You know, I think when I look back now, it was Whitley Strieber's communion that woke me up, if that makes sense, that made me think, oh my goodness, I couldn't put it down when I first read it. I read it through twice. You know, I just could not put it down. I thought, this is what's happened to me. Literally, you know, I know exactly how you feel. I actually read some of Bud Hopkins' books as well, and I wrote to Bud Hopkins in New York. He's not with us anymore, but I actually wrote to him in the early 90s. And I started to contact other experiences in the 90s, unless you've been through it yourself. And I do understand it's a natural reaction of most people to think that you're a bit mad or you're a loony, you know, because it's so much out of their experience, that their understanding. I don't know whether we're ready for contact, if this is how contact is initiated. It certainly does shake you. You know, it leaves you shaken, and it kind of disturbs your worldview completely, turns it upside down. You know, it's full of high strangeness, really. The things that have happened to me, they just don't make any sense even to me, you know. But when I look at them, the things they can do, I think they're technology. I have to think it is light years ahead of ours to fool our brains into thinking something's there when it isn't, and to be able to hide in plain sight, because you heard me say about flashing the camera, there was nothing there, and then a figure appeared actually on the photograph, you know, it was a digital camera. But there was nothing in my room when I took that. I was just hoping I would capture something, and I did. And maybe I was allowed to, I don't know. It's just really baffling.
And also, symbolism appears to be quite prominent in your experience.
Yes, particularly there was the fleur-de-lis was quite dominant in the one I had, you know, during that blackout. And I remember seeing what appeared to be like, you know, a Celtic knot. When I look back, I mean, I have my theories as to why that might be. I'm actually Celtic on my father's side, which is obviously my surname, I think. My father's from Scotland, my father's family, from the lowlands in Scotland, from Dumfries. I've actually looked at my family history and genealogy. And funnily enough, the weird thing is that I found that our family shield has the fleur-de-lis in it. which you have to wonder why, don't you? And I didn't know that till I did some research. So that's weird in and of itself, isn't it?
It is very strange.
Yeah. I've actually wondered.
I mean, the fleur de lis, that's, lily flower.
Yeah. And someone else told me, another experience told me that it was the bee, the symbol of the bee, the honeybee, which you can see actually when you invert it, it does look a bit like a bee with its wings outstretched. I don't know. I'd love to know more about it. You know, I know very little about it, really. But I do know it's in our family coat of arms, and it's connected to the De Gordon clan, who were connected with the McAdam clan, and that goes right back as well. But I don't know a lot about it.
I've heard it has religious connotations. I'm not sure if it's the Holy Trinity or something to do with the Virgin Mary. I know it has that kind of connection. And also the Celtic knot, I think that is, isn't it? I think it's infinity.
For infinity, yes. And you have to wonder why those were the images that predominated, that were left over in my head or whatever, you know, what were they trying to tell me? But, you know, I have to wonder. And I've actually thought, are they trying to tell me perhaps that I have the DNA in some way? Because if we go right back, I don't know whether you've heard of the author Freddie Silver or Eric von Däniken is more well known for it. But they postulate that ancient astronauts came to Earth, don't they, to help us when there was a big cataclysm. Because all the tribes on Earth carry myths of sky gods coming to help after there was this cataclysm or flood, the most common one being the story of Noah. But it's not, the story of Noah isn't unique to our culture. It's in all cultures and myths, you know, right across the world. And Freddie Silver goes into this in some depth. And also, as does Paul Wallace out of Eden, he's an author. But if you go right back to ancient civilizations, there's a lot of evidence suggests that we've had help at times when we've fallen flat on our face as a civilization, where we've had to help to reset civilization. So you wonder if these ancient symbols, if you know, if in fact they've come from them and we've just passed them down.
It's very feasible, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And it's a way of remembering, if you will, albeit merely with symbols, that you've come from us. I don't know. I might be wrong. I only can theorize. But I've also found out through a DNA analysis that way back I've got, and I was really surprised by this, I have to say, on my mum's side, I've got Arabic blood in me as well. So I have to wonder, you know, if we go far back enough, or is there some connection there with ancestry or something? And I just thought, you know, is this all coming out now because more people are awakening? Because, like I said earlier, we've got the internet now and we can contact each other and we can share our stories. And I'd be interested to know if people have similar stories. You know, I mean, I feel that the Americans are far more open about it than we British. Do you think that's true, or do you think we're coming out more about it now? I don't know.
We are coming out a lot more, that's for sure. I mean, I get plenty of emails from the UK.
You do? Well, that's good. That's good. That, because for years and years, I just kept it all to myself. I literally did. I tried to shove it to one side and just get on with my life, you know. But it's almost like they don't let you. It's like they'll leave you alone for so long and then they'll come back and baffle you with something else. This is how I feel anyway about it. And they'll do something, you know, like that stuff that appeared on my phone cover. And I feel like I'll probably get trolled for that and people will say, oh, no, she did that herself. It's obvious she's just... But I didn't. I honestly didn't. Hand on heart, it just, there was no logical way how that appeared. You know, it completely baffled me. It just frightened me, quite frankly. Just so many strange things all coming together. I have to wonder why it's happened to me. I would have rather done without it all, quite frankly, you know, because life's hard enough, isn't it, without all these things happening to you on top of it, you know.
Life is hard enough without having all this added confusion and trauma on top of it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Lorraine, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for letting me, for inviting me onto your podcast.
You're more than welcome. That's what it's all about. It's, you know, for people to come and share and tell their accounts and experiences that they, you know, they probably haven't told before.
I just feel feel as if it's time to come out and share it, you know, because I think we can help each other by sharing these things. I really do. And it's only by comparing things that we're going to establish, I think, that something has happened to us collectively. There must be a lot of people that this has happened to. The only way to find out is to out there.
Yeah, it happens, you know, yeah. It's happened to a lot of people. And, you know, there is no better time than now for people to come forward and share these accounts.
Yeah, I think so.
Keep in contact.
I will do. Okay, thank you.
That's wonderful, Lorraine. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is all for today. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Lorraine for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe. And keep watching the skies. Goodbye.